Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Gals Podcast. Sharon Vornholt is your host and the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, where you will learn how to become a savvy real estate investor, make money, build streams of passive income, and create a lifestyle and a business you love. Whether you're a seasoned real estate investor or just getting started, this show is for you. Now, let's talk real estate investing.
This is Sharon Vornholt with the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, and I am really excited about this interview today with Brian Haskins because I think this is one interview that can actually have the potential to change people's lives. Brian is a fellow real estate investor from the St. Louis area that's also a blogger, a coach, and an author. He is an expert in many aspects of real estate investing, but the one that we're going to talk about today is his expertise in everything that has to do with using virtual assistants in your business. I want to specifically ask Brian about how you scale your business more quickly using VAs and you get more free time in the process. Hey, Brian, it's great to have you here today.
Well, thank you very much, Sharon, for inviting me on. I'm really excited. You know, just like you said, this is one of those topics that a lot of people really have a lot of interest in. And, you know, it's exciting to, you know, just talk about how you can, you know, work less in your business and make more. So it's great to be on here and to be able to share this information with you and all your students.
Well, that's a great topic. I think where we find most of ourselves in the beginning is we look up and we are in a complete state of overwhelm. We have more work than one human being can do, and I'm not really sure why it is, but I was guilty of this too. I don't know why it is that we are slow to start to hire virtual assistants. Maybe you have some insight about that, but I wanted to start off with your story and have you tell everybody about how you got started, how long you've been investing in real estate, and just let them know about Brian.
Okay. Well, again, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. You know, we're going to cover a lot of really great stuff, so it's going to be a fun call. Just a little background about me. I'll kind of keep my story pretty short. I've been investing now for going on about 8 years. I got started back whenever real estate was booming, you know, before, you know, the fall in prices and all the different things that people talk about. I got started pretty much at a really young age. I wanted to get started rehabbing houses. I got kind of hooked on those TV shows. I'm sure you probably heard of them, like Flip This House and Flip That House and stuff like that. And those kind of got me thinking about, you know, real estate investing. And I knew that I always wanted to do something like that. I never really enjoyed school. I decided I didn't want to go to college, and I got started working pretty much right after high school. Started working in the construction trade. Had a friend of the family that kind of took me under the wing, kind of showed me the business for a couple years. And I decided to kind of make my first leap into real estate. And I convinced my parents to kind of help me get a loan to buy a house, to rehab. And things went really well. We made a lot of money. It was great. And it kind of helped me transition into pretty much a full-time rehabbing business. I was doing quite a few houses. Things were going great. And then just like in a lot of places, kind of like in 2008, the market kind of shifted here. I got stuck with quite a few houses and needed to find a new way to kind of supplement my income because I was, you know, doing so great. And then kind of overnight, you know, the rug kind of got pulled out from underneath me. So I started going to some real estate seminars and some local real estate investor groups and found out about wholesaling. Mm-hmm. And pretty much that's kind of how it worked. I found out about wholesaling, kind of jumped in with both feet and, you know, was able to kind of make enough money to keep my business going while I had those houses that I was trying to sell. Took a loss on quite a few houses that I was holding on to, but I was able to create a business and the cash flow that I needed through wholesaling. So that's kind of how I got started and kind of how I transitioned into the business that I run today, which I do primarily wholesaling, still do some rehabbing, but, you know, the market's changed a lot over the last 8 years. And, you know, it's just a great business to be in. You know, I've been in whenever things were really booming. You know, I've been in whenever it was the worst market possible, and then now, you know, as things are always changing and stuff like that. So it, you know, that's just kind of a snapshot of kind of how I got where I am today, basically.
So you're still wholesaling primarily today. I know you coach and you teach and all of that, but your main core strategy is still wholesaling.
Yep. I still have a wholesaling business here in St. Louis, doing, you know, traditional wholesaling stuff. You know, like I said, every once in a while, some light rehab and things like that, but primarily focused on wholesaling.
You sound like about the – that's about when the market got bad here for rehabbers, and that's exactly what did happen here. They were just – it seemed like overnight. I'm sure it wasn't overnight, but it seemed like overnight the houses just were sitting and sitting and sitting. And that's when I really got into – I kind of did it backwards then. I started wholesaling kind of as a – after I started rehabbing and having some rentals and that sort of thing. But, yeah, that was about the same time the market changed here. So how long were you in business before you hired your first VA?
Well, you know, it's funny. That was kind of one of the things I didn't even know about for the longest time in my business. I was, you know, really – just kind of working just like most people, you know, trying to do everything in my business, wearing all the different hats. I mean, I literally did everything in my business. And it was, I would say, probably close to 4.5 years ago that I found out about my first virtual assistant. And it took me a while to really kind of warm up to the idea of it. So I would say probably about 4 years ago, I hired my first virtual assistant. I was definitely very nervous. I mean, I heard a lot about it, you know, on the internet, things like that. I didn't know any other real estate investors that actually had hired anybody virtually. Most of the people that I knew, you know, had full-blown offices, people that were working for them and things like that. And I knew that was not something that I wanted. I didn't want to create some huge business with all this overhead or anything like that. I knew that, you know, whenever I kind of heard about virtual assistants, I thought it was a lot different concept than what a lot of people were doing. So took me a little while to kind of warm up to the idea. Didn't have the best experiences right out of the gate, but I stuck with it, you know, and I've been using them for about the last 4 years of my business, pretty much to kind of run about 90% of all the day-to-day stuff in my business for me.
And so you're about, like about the halfway point then, weren't you? Didn't I read somewhere you were like 20 when you started in your business?
Yeah, I was real young, 21, 22. I kind of got started. So, yeah, it was definitely an experience getting started that young. Had a lot of hurdles and obstacles that a lot of people, you know, didn't have to face, but it was good. I mean, you know, I've always wanted to do something different. You know, I didn't want to have a real job or didn't want to go to college and do the traditional way of, you know, kind of living my life, which definitely didn't sit well with my parents, but, you know, it's worked out well and, you know, but it's been good.
Well, I think there's some people that are just born entrepreneurs and they just know that whole traditional go to school, college and all that route is just not for them. And there's the group that maybe isn't so successful, but there's also a group of people like you that has been very successful. And I think it has to do with there's just something in you that makes you different, you know, that you're just an entrepreneur at heart. So it sounds like you did kind of what I did. You waited about the same length of time before hiring a virtual assistant. So I know I have a different feeling about it now, and I know you do too. So what would you tell folks about when should they hire their first VA?
You know, and that's a really good point. That's probably one of the questions I get asked the most about virtual assistants, because a lot of people have the mindset of thinking, you know, I need to wait until I get, you know, some deals coming in and I get, you know, established and things like that. You know, a lot of people think they need to wait that long before they hire their first virtual assistant. And after kind of going through it and kind of living that experience, I recommend actually that a lot of people get started with virtual assistants as soon as possible. Okay. And the reason I recommend that is because there's a few things that you learn in this business after you've done it a while. And one of the biggest things is our business is primarily marketing. That's really what we do. You know, if we're not marketing, then we really don't have a business. There's no leads coming in or anything like that. And that's really what I feel like, you know, after working with lots of students and coaching people, that's really the biggest hurdle that most new investors face, and the reason that most new investors never actually, you know, make it very far in real estate investing is because they don't focus the majority of their time on marketing. You know, there's so many different things that they feel like they need to be doing whenever they're first getting their business going, but the main focus is, you know, or should be marketing, because you don't need any of the other stuff in your business, you know, if you don't have the leads coming in. So it's always one of the most important things I tell people to get started. Maybe hire somebody 1 or maybe 2 hours a week for even just a few dollars an hour, just to make sure that your marketing is going out on a regular basis. Because what happens is, if you're a new investor and you're trying to do all these different things, you get that first deal that might come in and you start working on that deal and you're focusing on it and still trying to do everything else in your business, one of the first things that people stop doing is their marketing. Okay. So what happens is, if you get that deal closed, or even if it falls apart, you're going to have to build up your entire marketing funnel again and ramp that thing up to get your next lead. And that might take months for you to do, potentially. So if you have a virtual assistant, maybe that just, you know, for a couple hours a week, that sends out your marketing for you, you know, it's going to help people dramatically, you know, and there'll be a lot more success in real estate investing for a lot of new investors and things like that. So I always really urge people just to start out very small and start out with your marketing, but try to do it as quickly as you can in your business, and you'll definitely see really good success with that.
Yeah, I think that's excellent advice, because we both know that if you don't have any leads, you really, like you said, you really don't have a business. So marketing is your number one job as a real estate investor. So let's just dive right into setting up this virtual assistant machine. Now, and we're going to talk about down the line about how you manage your multiple virtual assistants, but I've heard you say that the very first step that anyone should do when they're going to even think about hiring a virtual assistant is to make a list of every single job you do in your business. Put it all down on paper.
Yep. And the reason that's so important, and I'm glad you brought that up, Sharon, is because, you know, really a lot of people don't realize all the things that they're trying to do in their business. I mean, you don't realize, you know, all the little things, all the time-consuming tasks that you do every single day. And a lot of people don't realize that 90% of those things aren't really generating them income directly. I mean, there's a lot of things that need to get done in your business that might not make you any money. But once you make a list and really look at day to day, every little tiny thing that you do that takes up time in your business, it's really eye-opening, okay? Because you're starting to realize, wow, I've spent 4 hours today on, you know, menial tasks that aren't going to equate to any money in my pocket. And those types of things can really build up. So it's a really important idea, just like you said, to sit down and make a list of every single thing that you do on a daily basis. Maybe do it for an entire week, just so you can kind of get a snapshot of what you do. Okay. And then what I recommend for people is to look through those things and kind of break that list down into things that make them money and things that are, you know, things that have to get done but don't necessarily make them any money. And then from those different lists, you know, you probably should focus on the things that make you money. Those are probably some of the things that, you know, that you probably shouldn't outsource right out of the gate, but those are things that you should still, you know, focus on. But you're going to be, you know, taking that list then and looking at some of the things that need to get done in your business that maybe you don't like to do, some of the things that aren't enjoyable, or maybe some of the things that are the most time consuming. Those are the things that I recommend that you outsource kind of at the start of your business, because those are things that maybe are important but don't get done because you don't enjoy doing them. Or maybe you dread the thought of just spending 3 hours or 2 hours a week doing something like that. Those are things that can be outsourced. And what's so important about outsourcing things that you don't want to do or the time-consuming things is you're going to be a lot happier, number one. And then number two, if it's something that's time-consuming, it's going to free up a lot of time in your business that you can now focus on the important things that are going to make you money.
That's excellent advice. Excellent advice. And I think I know I was guilty of this, and you brought it up a little bit earlier, but the first thing that comes to mind for folks is I can't afford it. So I wanted to talk a little bit about where you find VAs, how you find affordable VAs, and I just really want to, there's a big discussion going on all the time about, gee, if you want to hire somebody outside of the country, then you're taking away a job here in the U.S. But let's just address that elephant in the room before we go forward. I know how you feel about it, but let's tell everybody, you know, the pros and cons of that whole big situation.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that really is kind of, just like you said, the elephant in the room that people people that outsource and things like that, they, you know, they've probably thought about it a lot. And then there's a lot of people that maybe have never outsourced yet. And one of the biggest reasons that are holding them back is because they don't want to ship jobs to different countries and things like that, which I totally agree. Okay. Mm-hmm. And here's my thought on all this stuff. And, you know, this is just my opinion. Take it for whatever it is. But this is kind of how I feel about it. Typically, most of the jobs in my business, if I can afford to hire someone in the United States, I will. Okay. Mm-hmm. You can find virtual assistants here in the United States, believe it or not, for anywhere from $4 all the way up, you know, to however much you want to pay. Kind of the sweet spot that you'll find with a lot of virtual assistants here in the United States is you can find a fairly decent virtual assistant for anywhere from $4 to $7 an hour, believe it or not. Okay.
Wow.
So I try to hire people here in the United States. Okay, and we'll talk about how you can find those types of people here in the U.S. But if there's a job that I can't find someone here in the United States, or if maybe someone in a different country can do a better job, if there's someone more qualified, I don't mind hiring people in different countries, okay? And here's my thought on it. The reason I don't mind hiring people from different countries, let's say from the Philippines or maybe a different country like that, is because I know that by outsourcing this task, it's going to free me up to make a lot more money. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I make a lot more money in my business, what am I going to do with that money? I'm going to spend it right here in the United States. Okay. So in turn, I'm going to be, you know, spending the money that I generate here in the U.S. So if I maybe ship over $100 or $200, you know, a month to a virtual assistant in the Philippines, but in turn, it makes me an extra $10,000. Yeah, I sent over $100 worth of jobs to someone else. More than likely, someone that did those jobs probably wouldn't want to do that here in the United States, but I made $10,000 that more than likely I'm going to spend here in our economy that I wouldn't have made if I didn't outsource that $100 or $200 to a different person in a different country. So that's just kind of my thought on it. You know, of course, I would like to try to keep as many jobs here as possible. So at first, you know, like I always look at, you know, the different candidates and try to find people here in the United States that are qualified for the work that I want to do and, you know, can actually do it within my budget. And if so, I'll move forward with them. But if not, there are certain circumstances where I will hire people in different countries.
Okay. So where do you find your VAs? And especially give some folks some tips for finding qualified people that are affordable here, you know, qualified U.S. workers.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great question. You know, I tend to hire all my virtual assistants through a website called Odesk, and that's odesk.com. And the reason I do that is for a couple different reasons. Number one, I like the site because it has built-in management features. Okay, so it's really easy to use. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of virtual assistants from all different countries, all different backgrounds and all different skill types already there in one place. So it's a lot easier to find people. Another reason I like using companies like that is they put in place all of the independent contractor agreements. They handle all the taxes, the payments, everything that that normally you would have to handle if you hired someone just here in the United States as an employee, or maybe if you hired a virtual assistant on your own. Those are all the different types of things that you would need to make sure that you do to keep yourself protected. Everything's already done through that company. Okay. Now, a couple things to know about Odesk. The way that they make money and the way all these different sites make money is a lot of times they will take a percentage of what you pay the virtual assistant. Okay. They don't raise your price, or they don't typically it's not like you have to pay to be a part of those sites or anything like that. A lot of times the sites are free, and they'll just take – a lot of times it's 10%, sometimes a little bit less out of the contractor. So if that contractor was going to work for you for $3 an hour, for every hour that they work, ODES would make 30 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's how they make their money. So that's the type of website I like to use. There's also websites out there called Elance. I mean, they're just growing like crazy out there now. There's tons of them. I prefer to use ODesk. I've been using them pretty much from the start. They seem to be the easiest. They're the most kind of laid back. I started out using Elance, and there's a lot of rules and regulations with Elance as far as, for example, if you post a certain amount of jobs and you don't hire virtual assistants for those jobs, Elance will, you know, close your account down and things like that. So there's a lot of little nuances that ODesk is just a lot easier on, and they're a lot easier to deal with. So that's pretty much where I hire primarily all of my virtual assistants. Another great tip for using ODesk or a site similar to ODesk is because they will step in if there's any kind of disputes or anything like that. If maybe the person that you've hired doesn't do the work for you, or if they don't do it the way that you want, and let's say you've already paid them for that work, or if something comes up and they don't deliver what they promise, ODesk will step in, handle the situation, make sure that your money and that you are protected. So it's a great idea to use a third-party site like that instead of just going on like Craigslist or any kind of, you know, work site or something like that and finding your own virtual assistant to work for you. You know, so it's just kind of one of those things. It's great for beginners to start with a third party site like that.
Yeah, that's the one that I use. I had gotten recommendations from people, and I found it to be very easy to use. Like you, I like that they track their work. I like that they're, for the most part, they don't get paid until the work is delivered. You know, they have all those checks and balances in place, like you said, and the payment, it's so easy. The whole payment thing is so easy with them. They're just there's the advantage of working with they have a system, and it's a company. And one thing I did learn with the first time, of course, I knew they were taking a percentage of what the worker made, but I wanted to bonus my girl a set amount of money, and then they came back and said, well, if you want her to have, let's just say $50, then you'll need to send this much, which I did, and I really hadn't thought about, you know, that end of it. But if you want to give that person a specific tip, then you will have to actually send a little bit extra so the ODesk gets their cut. But they are, I agree with you, they're an easy company to work with. Now, I know that on there, you can either choose, we'll use that site for example. Some people say, I want this much an hour. I think you can somewhat negotiate with those people. I've done that before if you think it's too much. Or you can also have them bid on a job, which I have done before, a bigger job. What's your best method, or do you use a combination of methods too for paying, you know, deciding how much to pay the people?
Yeah, that's a really great point. And then after this, you know, we should probably circle back too and kind of talk a little bit like about what you had mentioned before with just kind of explaining how much things like that cost, how much an hour virtual assistants are and things like that.
Right.
But just like you said, there's multiple ways that you can pay people. You can pay them hourly. Okay. A lot of times I will use hourly pay if it's going to be a long-term job. Let's say, for example, I'm hiring a virtual assistant to handle my marketing for me 3 hours a week. Okay. That would be an hourly job. Okay. So what would happen is each week she would log her 3 hours as she works them. And like ODesk will actually monitor all the work, and they'll take screenshots of her doing the work, so you can kind of follow up and make sure that everything is being done properly. And then each week ODesk will pay her the amount that she's worked. Now for like a set price or a fixed price job, typically you'll use those for one-time jobs. Like let's say, for example, you hire a virtual assistant to make a website for you where you want to post all your properties for sale. Okay, a lot of times that would be like a one-time or a fixed price job, and that would give you the best result because then you know you're only paying one price. Whether if you were to hire them to do like an hourly type job for something like that, you may not know up front how much it's going to cost you if you did it hourly. So it's always kind of better to kind of cap it sometimes and do a job in that circumstance.
Yeah. And what do you find that you're, we talked about this a little bit, but go ahead and go over, you know, what you expect to pay in general through ODesk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a really great question. I know this is probably one of the biggest ones on everybody's mind. They all want to know kind of, well, what can I hire a virtual assistant for? And, you know, what should I expect to pay and things like that?
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you up front, okay, you can hire virtual assistants for as little as 10 to 50 cents an hour, okay? I've seen lots of virtual assistants that will work for literally next to nothing, okay? And before I explain all the different price points and things like that, I want to kind of explain the mindset of a virtual assistant, which is really important, and the reason why they're willing to work for such lower amounts of money, okay? First of all, if you're hiring people here in the United States or other countries, you know, and you hire someone at a lower rate, okay, there's two potential reasons why they would be working for a lower rate. Number one, maybe they're desperate. They'll literally work for anything just to support their family. I mean, I've seen that happen in a lot of circumstances. People will work, you know, just to bring some money in. They'll work as like a freelance virtual assistant. Also, I've seen people in the United States that maybe will work for a lower amount of money because they have maybe their own little agency set up where they will outsource the work to other virtual assistants and manage the projects and make sure that the quality of the project is up to par. And I've also seen a lot of virtual assistants, and this is going to be true with people in the United States as well as people in other countries. If you hire someone for anywhere from $5 to $7 an hour here in the United States, there's a good chance that they're working more than just 40 hours a week. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at that, like if they're making $7 an hour here on ODesk, you know, and you would think, wow, how could anybody work for that amount of money? They might not just be working 40 hours a week. Okay. So a lot of times what virtual assistants will like to do is they'll work two 40-hour a week jobs for two people. Okay. And that's kind of how a lot of virtual assistants make their living, is they will, you know, work 80 hours a week. So that pretty much doubles what a normal person would make working 40 hours a week. So if they were paid $7 an hour, you know, they would work double, but they would get the extra money. So that's how a lot of people can work and charge you or the lower amounts of money in the United States. Now, in the Philippines and other countries, and I mention the Philippines a lot because I have found some of the best workers outside of the United States to be in the Philippines, because a lot of people that work and live in the Philippines, they understand English very well. They can speak it very easily. A lot of times it's taught to them while they're in school. They understand how to read and write it. And the language barrier is very easy to get over. There's not a strong accent. You know, so I outsource a lot to the Philippines. And one of the things to know about people in the Philippines is that there's hardly any steady work in the Philippines. Okay. So keep this in mind. A lot of the people that, that are going to be working there, even as doctors, lawyers, people that are teachers and things like that, that have great education, there's just not a lot of steady work there. So they would rather work for someone 40 hours a week or 80 hours a week that, you know, they might work for two people, but the work is going to be steady and the work is going to be guaranteed. So they'll be willing to take a lower amount of money to do those types of things. Okay.
Okay.
And another thing to keep in mind in the Philippines and other countries like that, the cost of living and what the dollar translates into is going to be much different than it is here in the United States. So a dollar or $2 is going to go a lot further in different countries like that.
Okay. That's a great point. Now, when you this could be a whole podcast itself, but I want to just touch briefly on the interview process. Once you go onto one of these sites and you post your job, you will get candidates, and then it's up to you to interview them, because ultimately, whether you're going to succeed with this person, you're going to have to interview them just as if you were hiring an employee. So do you do that by phone or Skype, or what is your just basic procedure to give people just a general idea of how to handle that?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, it's going to vary depending on the type of job that it is. If it's just going to be a general virtual assistant that's going to be doing things just through the internet for you. In most cases, I'll just do an online-only interview. If it is somebody that maybe is going to be answering calls for my real estate investing business or making follow-up calls or interacting with people through the phone, I will definitely schedule a phone interview with them over Skype. But in most cases, my interview process is pretty simple. What I like to do is I will post the job on Odesk, and you'll notice you'll get a lot of different responses in certain circumstances. You know, a lot of times if it's a very general type of job post, like if you're hiring just a basic virtual assistant, you could get hundreds of people to apply for your job depending on how long you leave it open. And one of the first things I like to do in my interview process, so I'll go through, and Odesk rates all of their workers through feedback. You leave feedback anytime someone finishes a job up for you, okay? So once that feedback is given, it shows up on their profile. So it'll show feedback for the specific jobs as well as kind of like a general feedback score, which averages all their other feedback. So I like people that have very high feedback. I like people that have worked on Odesk for a while. They have lots of hours that they've worked for people. And I like to also see what country they're from. What their English, you know, skills are and things like that. So what I'll do is I kind of have just a little barrier that I use whenever I first am going through the interview process. Like anybody that like Odesk will rank them, they'll get a total of 5 stars for their feedback. Anybody that has 4.5 or higher feedback, I will go ahead and let them pass the first round of the interview process. So anybody that doesn't match that criteria, I'll go ahead and eliminate right out of the gate. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's what I do. Yeah. And then what I'll do is I'll go through, and then all the people that I've narrowed it down to, typically it's going to be anywhere from 5 to 10 people, maybe a little bit more. I'll go through and I'll open up their profile, and I'll look at all the different jobs that they've done, and I'll try to find jobs that that fit similar to the criteria that I'm looking to hire them for, and I'll see what their specific feedback was. Maybe I'll look through their portfolio and see maybe some of the different tests that they've taken on OS and things like that. And then from there, I'll start to be a little more stringent on who I pick. And then I'll try to narrow it down to maybe 2 or 3 people. And then from there, once I've got my final 2 or 3 people, I'll send them out just a very simple, like a test job that they can do. Might be, you know, just a very simple task. And then a lot of times the person that I will pick will be the person that has done the task the best with the least amount of, you know, direction or questions that they've asked. You know, you want them to kind of figure it out on their own. So whoever does the best on that, typically I will hire that person. Okay.
Okay.
But another quick little tip that'll really save you a ton of time. Not every single person that you hire is going to work out. Okay. That's just the way that it is, you know. So one of the things I'll do is maybe once I narrow it down to my top 2 or 3 or even my top 5, Odesk will allow you to save that contractor as one of your, like, preferred contractors or something like that. I forget how they word it. But if you go ahead and save those top 5 people, then you already know who the next person to go to is whenever, like, that particular job doesn't work out or something like that. You can move on to the next person if you need to. Instead of going through the entire process all over again, you can go ahead and just go to the second person in line and try to work out a deal with them.
Yeah, that's a great time-saving tip. So, okay, so we've got now, you've got your candidates, and I know that you have 6 virtual assistants, I think, in your business now. So that's a lot to manage. So I guess that this next question is a 2-part question. What kind of systems did you need to create for your business when you decided to outsource to that level where there's systems certainly needed if you've only got a couple, but when you get 6, that's a whole different ballgame.
Yep. And, you know, just to make this really clear kind of up front, I don't recommend that most people, whenever they're first starting out, hire lots of virtual assistants.
Yeah.
Most cases, you could have one virtual assistant that will manage 80% of the day-to-day stuff in your business. The only reason that I have moved into hiring more virtual assistants is because I have very specific virtual assistants for very specific tasks now.
Okay.
And that's because that I've grown my business and scaled my business to the point to where it's feasible for me to do that. You know, whenever you're first starting out, virtual assistants can handle pretty much the majority of the stuff that you're going to throw at them. But for me and my business, I try to grow my business each and every month, and I really want as much hands-off as possible. I want to do as little as possible in my business. So for me, it was important to really take that business and really kind of scale it down to the point to where everybody knows their very specific tasks. And I have my business kind of set up a little bit differently than most people will whenever they first start out. And the reason I say that is because I have hired virtual assistants to do very specific things. Like, I have a virtual assistant that will do my marketing for me, virtual assistant that keeps up on, like, the online stuff, my websites and things like that, virtual assistants to handle all your incoming phone calls. There's just a lot of different things that they do. But, like, the reason I say it's a little bit different is because I also have a virtual assistant that is kind of like the manager of those other virtual assistants, okay?
Oh, okay.
So instead of me, managing everybody, there's basically one virtual assistant that just gives them the task for the day. They report to them, make sure, you know, if they have any questions or problems. They also give them a daily report to make sure that everything's on track. And then that way in my business, I can spend as little as possible just overseeing everything, getting one report daily from one virtual assistant instead of getting a report from all of them, okay? I just get one report. And I can make sure, you know, everything's going okay. I have a bird's eye view, basically, of how everything works. Now, don't get me wrong. I did not start out this high tech. I started out much, much, much more basic with just one virtual assistant. But, you know, over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, it's kind of transformed into this, and which has allowed me to pretty much outsource about 95% of the daily stuff that I do in my business. And it allows me to work about 1 to 2 hours a day in my real estate investing business, but still basically get a full-time income from it, closing, you know, 3 to 5 to 7 deals a month, working just 1 to 2 hours a day.
Wow, that is just awesome. That's an awesome piece of information. And since this series is kind of about, you know, how do you jump up from the you know, doing a few deals a year to really having a scalable business, this is just great, great information. And that was one thing I was going to ask you, is how much you work right now. So kind of just to wrap up, this has been a phenomenally good interview, and Brian has given everybody information that, gosh, you just need to listen to this a couple of times to really soak it all up. But do you have some tips for listeners today for decreasing their chances of getting burned in this business and really, you know, maybe some tips for, you've given some great interview tips. Are there any final tips you have for succeeding with using VAs in your business?
Yes, and I'm so glad you brought this up, because there are two very, very, very important things that you must know whenever you start outsourcing, okay? And just to kind of put this out there, I would say 70 to 80% of the problems or the bad experiences that people have with virtual assistants is not the fault of the virtual assistant, okay? 70 to 80% of the time, it is actually the fault of you, the person that's hiring that virtual assistant. And let me explain why, okay? They work only as good as you train them, okay? They only understand the job, you know, as much as you will explain to them, okay? So for people that think they can just hire a virtual assistant, okay, and then tell them a couple of little things and then just kind of send them on their way and everything's going to be great, it just doesn't work like that, okay? It really doesn't. So the most important thing to know about is that you have to create good systems for them to follow, okay? And this might take me just a few minutes to go through, but I want to explain what a system is and how you can kind of create them for your business. Just because this is really important, I want to make sure everybody takes this away from the call. A system is basically four parts, okay? And the reason why you create systems is because you want your business to run the exact same way over and over again, and everything to be done the exact same way without you having to do it each time, okay? So that's the reason why you create systems. It's like when you go to McDonald's or Subway, you know, the sandwiches are always the same because they follow a very simple process. And that's kind of how you want to think about your business whenever you create these systems. So once you've determined something that you want to outsource in your business, you need to think about that and really break that part of your business down and create good systems for someone else to follow. So the four parts to creating a system, number one, I like to create an overview, okay? And this overview is just, you want to explain this particular task that the person is going to be doing for you in a simple enough manner that they understand what it is, even if they're not in your industry, okay?
Okay.
So just maybe a paragraph or two that just explains what they're going to be doing and why they're going to be doing it, okay? The second part is going to be creating a simple step-by-step guide for actually creating or doing the task, okay? So, for example, the way that you would create this or do this is just actually do the particular project or task that you're going to be hiring them to do, and then just write down each and everything that you've done. So, for example, if you were going to teach someone how to, send a property blast out or an email out, you would say, all right, you're going to go to this website, you're going to use this username, this password, you're going to log in as me, you're going to use this subject line, you're going to use this in the body text, you're going to send it out to this person, that person. You want to make it as simple as possible and leave it and add in all the little steps that some people might forget about. So that's what you want to do, secondly.
Okay.
And then thirdly, what I like to do is I like to record a video of me doing that process. Okay, so record a quick video of you sending out that email. All right. And there's a lot of free ways to record videos of your computer. One of them on the top of my head is jingproject.com, jingproject.com. You can just Google that. And you can record very simple videos of you doing that, okay? And the fourth step that I like to create whenever I do a system is just a very simple checklist. And sometimes it's not going to apply. You might not need a checklist. And sometimes you might not need a video for the particular task. But those are all things that you should consider adding to your system to teach someone how to do that particular task in your business, okay? So there's a lot greater chance for success when hiring your first virtual assistant if you gave them a system that was very detailed for them to do, okay? And that's one of the things you always want to keep in mind. And then secondly, if you're going to be hiring a long-term virtual assistant, they're going to need to get to know your business a little bit. So you're going to have to plan on, at least for the first couple of weeks, spending a little bit of time just kind of overlooking their work, making sure everything's going okay, and then helping them out. And then each, day, just spend a little less time with them, But if they're going to be working for you for the long haul, and you really are, serious about this business, spend a little bit of time with them up front, and it's going to go a long way. So it's really important to make sure that you do those things, and you will have a lot better success rates with your virtual assistants.
Those are excellent tips, Brian. I know that I've gotten kind of in the habit of shooting these little short videos, and I think the combination of writing it down, which I like to do too, and then shooting the video, it gives them they can. First of all, you're creating a library. Should you ever have to hire another person, you're only going to do this once. But you're also giving it to them so that maybe they don't have to ask you if they do a task and then they don't do that same thing for months or for a long period of time, then they have a reference to go back to that is not you. They can go back to the information that you have given them. Well, this is just great, great information, and I want to thank you so much for coming on today. I want everybody to be sure to go over to your blog, BrianHaskinsRealEstateBlog.com, and pick up his free 141-page book, Real Estate Investing.
Made Easy.
Lost my paper. Made Easy.
Yep.
Real Estate Investing Made Easy. I downloaded it. It's a great information-packed book. Brian also has a podcast channel, RealWealthPodcast.com, where he puts all of the podcasts. And then when I post this on my blog, I will put all of the links to all of these things. So he's got a ton of great information over there. As I said, Brian does coaching and all sorts of things. So once again, Brian, thank you so much for coming on. And I hope this really helps a lot of people take their business to the next level so that they're not you know, stuck down there in that beginner stage, and they get the help that they need.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for having me. I've had a lot of fun. You know, I love sharing this type of information with people, and I just, you know, I'm excited about it. I'm passionate about outsourcing and real estate investing, so it's something I could talk about forever. But thank you very much for having me on here, and again, thanks for listening to the podcast. I know you've got a lot of great followers and a lot of great people listening to this, so thanks everybody for spending your time with us. I appreciate it very much.
Yes, and thanks once again, Brian, and we'll talk soon.
All right, thanks, Sharon.
Okay, are you there?
Yep, I'm still here.
Okay. Yeah, I stopped the recording. It was like a little bit of a delay there. We have a kitten in the house. My daughter is always rescuing animals, and about the time I went to look down at the title of your book, the kitten walked up on the desk here and sat on the paper. So it's like, oh, crap.
That's funny.
So, yeah, I'm like, oh, Lordy, just what I need, and I told her another animal. Well, that was great, great information, and the you know, I like to spend time with people that did this younger. You know, I had my first business I started more when I was about 40, and I had that for a good while, and I started investing in between times there. So I get excited when I see people that have enough sense to start when they're in their 20s. You know, before you've done this, I think, before you actually have children and that sort of thing. Are you married? I don't even know. You are married, aren't you?
I am, yep, recently married. Me and my wife, we've been together for a really long time, but we just recently got married. No kids. It's a different experience whenever you really start when you're young. There's a lot of hurdles and stuff that you got to face that a lot of people don't have to, you know, a little bit later on in life, you know. But it's definitely a great business that anybody can do. And that's really one of the cool things about it, you know. It just shows that it doesn't matter if you're young or old, you can still do it.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't make any difference. And one of the fellows in my mastermind group, I don't know if you've come across him yet. He's from Columbus, Ohio. Jeff Kowalczyk.
I don't know him.
Jeff is 27. He's somebody you should definitely connect with and get on your podcast. You know, my mastermind group has people that are of all ages, and Jeff is the youngest. In fact, we went to a seminar four of us out of the six back, in the fall, and we were putting up pictures, and I told Jeff, I said, you know, somebody posted them on Facebook, and I said, Jeff, all your friends are going to want to know, what the heck are you doing traveling with all these old people? It is so much fun to watch him, because there's a certain fearlessness that you have more at your age, and I know Jeff, he had bought a big package of properties. He started out kind of like you, doing some rehabbing and buying, and Jeff is still rehabbing, and he had bought a rather large package of properties and started making them into rentals. But in the back, he had been cultivating hedge funds. You know, you'd have to really talk to him. It'd be really interesting for a podcast of yours. And Jeff just recently sold off to a hedge fund most of the bad properties in that package, paid off his private lender. I think he sold them for $1.2 million, paid off his private lender the $600,000 he owed him, and now is in a wonderful position to grow his business, and he's 27 years old. I mean, it's just...
That's amazing.
It's the stuff you just kind of go, oh, heck.
Mm-hmm.
But because I had told him when we were at the seminar in Atlanta in the fall, I said, Jeff, you do know, you know, you're 27, might be 28 now. You could be retired and wealthy way before you're 40, the way your business is going now. And he was, mm-hmm. when he sold those properties, he said, oh, you really gave me a lot of courage, you know, to just go for it. And I said, no, you'd already gone for it, you know. But he's a real interesting guy who's really growing his business, too. So,
that's awesome.
But anyway, well, thanks so much. This is really interesting for me. I did have a couple of quick questions for you, though.
Sure.
I know, wondering.
I got your email the other day. I wasn't able to respond. The last couple of weeks have been a little busy. My wife's actually getting a new job, and we've been kind of taking some time off and doing some traveling and stuff, but I definitely wanted to make sure I respond back to you, but I've got time now.
Oh, that's fine. A couple of things came up, a couple of notes I wrote myself while we were talking. Your VA that manages your other VAs, how much do you pay her? Do you pay her, I'm assuming you pay her more for that task, or is it just one of the tasks she does?
Well, for that particular virtual assistant, that's someone that I've had with me for over a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm.
So I've actually hired her first just to kind of do normal stuff in my business. She's really kind of learned the business, been doing it for a long time. So one of the things that I did was whenever I asked her to do that position, I gave her a raise. She was making about $350 an hour, and then I basically doubled her pay. So she's making, $7 an hour right now.
Okay.
But she's from the Philippines.
I've only got one right now, although I've used other people for like just one task.
Mm-hmm.
But I got so lucky with her the first time out, and she asked for $4.44 an hour, and she had already done one job for me that was transcribing a set number of like a dozen videos, and
mm-hmm.
We had a set price, and she did a bang up job. She's smart, and she's
yep.
a self starter, and you can say, one time, here's the Dropbox account, and she's got it. She never asks you again for anything like that. But she's just a great VA that I could see where I could transition her into that role if I got, several people. So I was just kind of wondering about a price range. And I know that you have, like, somebody that answers your phone, is that somebody from the U.S.? I think you said that it was somebody from the U.S.
Yeah, I have a little bit of an interesting kind of setup with that. I've been pretty lucky. A while ago, I hired a lady to answer my phone for me, and she was a retired lady, lived in Wisconsin. She was just looking to make some extra money. She
mm-hmm.
created a little mini call center, her and like I think two of her other friends that are retired, and
mm-hmm.
they answer phones for me, pretty much kind of on-call type thing. They don't necessarily
uh-huh.
work specifically for me, but from like 8 a.m. to like 8 p.m., they answer calls live. They do like three shifts between the three ladies.
Mm-hmm.
I pay them about $7 an hour to do stuff for me, which is a little on the high side, but
mm-hmm.
A lot of people you can pay like per call and stuff like that. But I've had her for a while, and I just have to pay just the one lady $7 just to answer my phones for me. And it's nice to have someone that's always there to answer them live. She's from the US and stuff, so it has worked out well. But there's a lot of options now with call centers and stuff going through ODesk. You can do a lot of research on there because there are a lot of people that do like the smaller boutique style call centers, because what's so nice about that is they'll get to really know your business,
mm-hmm.
understand why they ask the questions, understand like the answers to the questions and stuff like that, because
mm-hmm.
most call centers will never take the time
to do that.
So, and
yeah.
that's really, really important. So that'll just kind of give you a little bit of advice there on that. Just, do some research and really make sure you find someone that's going to stay small and, that'll really get to know your business. You'll have to pay a little more, but it'll be worthwhile.
Right, right. Because there is always that time difference with people in the Philippines. So that was one, like, even if you found somebody that could speak English,
mm-hmm.
Then there was that. And I guess the last thing, I was curious, that I've noticed that people have a separate podcast site for their, like you have a separate, you have your blog. And is there a reason why you don't put your podcast just on your blog as part of your blog? Or is there a reason that I don't know about that folks have a separate podcast site?
No, there's really no reason. I'll tell you why I did it, just because I looked at some other people, and that's kind of, they have their own like podcast
yeah.
blog, but
yeah.
there's a lot of people that don't. Like Sean Terry, he's got, I think the number 3 rated podcast right now. And he's got, I think, his podcast on his own blog.
Right.
I don't know. I just kind of wanted to separate it a little bit and just kind of, to be honest with you, I just like looked at some other people's stuff and see what they have, but I don't think it really makes that much of a difference.
Yeah, well, I know Chris Bruce does that too. I think you all have talked before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, and I'm in the stage where right now where I'm going to get some podcasts ahead and make that decision. But I thought that's really a basic question, but maybe there's something I'm missing here, or maybe it's just a question of that's how you want to do it.
No, yeah, I just kind of looked at it, you know, and just saw. But, I mean, there's probably, you know, no real rhyme or reason. But I will tell you, I'll send you over a couple resources for when you go to set up your podcast.
Okay.
Because it's definitely not the easiest thing to do. I don't know if you've done it yet or not, but it's
No, and I'm dreading it, to tell you the
truth. There's a guy that I know that he has a website called, I think, School of Podcasts, and I'll send you over his link. He does, like, I think, like $60 an hour. He does consulting. I've hired him numerous times just for little questions here and there. He also does, like, you can get, like, 15 minutes or 30 minutes of consulting, but it's $60 an hour if you buy a full hour. You know, he'll even set your podcast up for you. But there's also another set of videos online that I found, actually two sets of videos that show you how to set your podcast up. So I'll send them over to you, and you can use those. It'll really help you out a lot.
Okay, now is this through? You're talking about the setup through iTunes.
Yeah, it'll show you how to actually like set up the actual blog, how to load the actual podcast on your blog, and then how to set it up so iTunes will pull those podcasts off your blog and all that stuff.
Okay.
Because there's a lot more to it than I had any idea, so it should help you out. You can watch videos a couple times, and then. You know, that podcast consulting guy, I've hired him, and he does great work, and he's really fast, so he can help you out a ton.
I was going to say, that was my next question. Is he fast or slow?
No, he's really fast. He does have a full-time job, but he usually can get back to you pretty much right away. He does a lot of his work in the evening time and stuff like that, but, you know, and he's also got some products and stuff that he sells, but I usually just hire him to do consulting. He can jump on the phone with you and just hammer it out.
Yeah, now if he were going to set this up for you, let's say you had set up your site and he was going to set it to upload the podcast or whatever, are we talking hours or an hour? Or
I would imagine he could probably do it in an hour. What I would do is I would file the videos and try to get the majority of it all set up first.
Set up,
And then what I would do is once you're like pretty much ready to go and you're ready to kind of upload all your stuff, I would then be like, hey, let's spend an hour on the phone with the guy, and then he'll do like a screen sharing thing with you on Skype, and you can even give him all the login stuff, or he can show you what to do, and he'll just go through and just do all the final stuff for you, you know. But if you can get your blog up and get all that stuff going, he can get you know, everything else done for you pretty quick.
Okay.
I would imagine in an hour.
Okay, well, cool. Well, thanks. That'll be helpful, because tell people, Steph Davis and I, we say we're tech idiots, and we're not quite that bad, but it's definitely not easy sometimes.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not easy for me either, so, like, I always struggle with it. It's nice to be able to outsource it to other people and have them help you out, because it really will make your life a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah, really. I'm already thinking of ways I can ramp up my outsourcing. So, well, thanks, Brian, and I'll let you know when I put this up on the blog and or the, you know, when I get it up, where I get it up, and hopefully we'll connect again soon.
All right. I'll talk to you soon, Sharon. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.